This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, welcome back. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610 on a Friday, our final hour of coverage here in West Palm Beach. Big thanks to Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors once again for sending us here for a trip that I would say, Seth, even superseded our trip from 2 years ago.
Oh, way better, way better. Yeah. I think there were more intriguing things about this Astros camp to begin with. And then also, we wanted to partake of the experience like fans, and we did more of that this year. So it was really everything about this camp and this spring training and just, I think, the way we took it all in, it was a lot of fun.
It was just more interesting, too, from a baseball standpoint for me, which sounds weird to say because when we were here 2 years ago, that was a team that just won the World Series. And I'm not saying it was uninteresting 2 years ago, but really the only thing I can remember us showing up being like, all right, I need to see this, was Jose Abreu. And I don't remember being as completely and utterly upset with him in that spring training.
No, we were impressed with him in
training. Yeah, he was
We were impressed. You see him in person for the first time. Yeah. The first thing you notice is, oh, this guy's huge. And then he was out there all the time.
He got some hits.
He's this older player that was out there getting all the reps and everything. There was nothing to be upset about.
This camp, I feel like we're getting a window into the future a little bit more with this team. There's just more spots that are up for grabs with this team. The opening day lineup is far from etched in stone right now with this team, whereas the team 2 years ago, very much etched in stone, I would say, if I have to look back at it.
I
had a team with Tucker and Bregman on it.
The first real sign that the Astros are in a different mood and moving into a new era was the Kyle Tucker trade. So you got to see all the elements involved in that trade right in front of you. So that was really cool. And then the fact that Cam Smith had such a great debut, and then in his second game yesterday had a hit. So he's batting .600 right now.
Yep.
That was an unexpected surprise. I went in thinking like, all right, I know people think a lot of Cam Smith, but it's spring training, doesn't matter. He is still just a prospect. But then he exploded.
Yeah, like in Thursday's game in Port St. Lucie, when they left him in to bat again in the sixth inning, I was legitimately excited about that.
Yeah,
you know, we get to watch him hit again. I'm with you on all that. All right, so let's dueling piano this thing then now, because we saw a lot of things that we got excited about that I think through the lens that we've been providing people all week, we can get the people excited about.
Okay, so I already
your number one?
I already did Cam Smith.
Yeah.
So I would say John Singleton and his physique, and this is another one that I shouldn't be this excited about it, but it's such a great story individually for John Singleton and how much he's been through, to the point where last year was the first year he'd ever spent an entire season on a major league roster
after
being such a promising first round pick and then out of baseball completely. But usually you hear guys talk about how they've come in the best shape of their lives, and you kind of see it and maybe whatever. No, this guy is in probably the absolute best shape of his life.
Yeah, he's transformed himself.
He looks completely different. Yeah. And I don't think the pictures really do it justice, because when you see him in person, he's got the shoulders that are just as broad as ever, but then he almost looks like a cartoon version of a baseball player. And you'd think, okay, well, what does that really matter? I do think that he looked more athletic or more spry or nimble at first base. I thought he had a couple nice plays defensively that I'm not so sure he would have made last year, that he actually made look pretty easy. And hopefully if he can get the bat going and maybe having a little bit more of a fluid swing without that extra 25 pounds on him, as a pinch hitter, maybe he brings something this year.
Yeah, no, Singleton, I'm happy for him. You know what I mean? That's the big thing. And you're right, the baseball uniform doesn't do him justice. It's the picture that got everybody going on the internet was him just getting done with the batting cages where they had the workout T-shirts on. Like, ooh, yeah, no belly. Yeah.
Yeah, but when you see it, when you can notice somebody's physique through a baseball uniform because they're so baggy and everything, it's not like football or basketball usually.
That's right.
You can see he's just put together completely differently.
That's right. That's right. Hey, quick reminder here, too, in about 15 or 20 minutes, about 9:20 or so, we will be running Adam Spillane's interview with Dana Brown, which is an excellent. You and I have both had a chance to listen to it. It's an excellent conversation with the general manager of the Astros. So stay tuned for that. Seth and I are giving you the things that we saw that we liked. I really enjoyed the automated strike zone on Thursday at the Mets facility there in Port St. Lucie.
It was way smoother and quicker.
It's the dorkiest thing I've ever said. It admitted to enjoying. I really enjoyed the automated strike zone.
I didn't know. I didn't really have any opinions about it one way or the other. And I know a lot of people are against just adding any kind of technology. You're not going to notice it. It's like in tennis where it's immediate because they're using all the tracking. The computer's making the decision. The umpires aren't going to make a phone call or anything. There were two challenges in the first at bat of the bottom of the first inning yesterday.
Yep.
And it was actually made it more exciting.
Yeah.
Because first you see the batter challenges. The first one,
they challenge by tapping on their helmet.
They pull an Anthony Richardson.
They have to do it right away. Yeah.
They're like, I want to come out. I'm tired.
Anthony
Richardson.
That's
except
right.
That this is to signify. They have to do it right away. They're not allowed to get any input from the dugout or anything. So there's no discussion. The batter says, nope, that was a ball.
Yep.
He challenges it. They put the graphic up on the scoreboard. And within a few seconds, so it's the graphic on the scoreboard is just the strike zone that you see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ball location pops up, and they say whether it was overturned or upheld.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yeah. So we had one on each side. We had a batter challenging one, got overturned from a strike to a ball. And then on a pitch that would have been a 3-1 count, Caratini tapped the helmet, challenged it, made it 2-2. He won that challenge.
Yeah, he won that one.
Yeah. So. It almost made me think like that they did it so bang-bang quickly, and it was in the bottom of the first. It almost made me wonder if both teams are doing it almost like as a service to the crowd. This is how, because I don't remember one getting challenged the rest of the day.
No.
That I was watching. I mean, I can't say.
Well,
I was
it happens so fast that if you're not really paying attention, you really wouldn't notice it. It didn't feel like it disrupted the flow of the game at all.
Got to pay attention to it.
So if you win the challenge, you get to keep that challenge.
Yeah.
So you can, if you do a good job with it, you can get to the end of the game still with a couple of challenges.
You can beat, the way I read the rules, you can keep challenging until you get two wrong.
Right.
You know? Yeah. You get basically two mulligans. So that was cool getting to see that. What's your next thing that got you fired up?
In advance, I'd say Altuve in left field. I'm just I'm excited. I'm
today.
Excited in advance to see Altuve in left field today.
I'm every emotion. I'm excited. I'm nervous.
Yeah. I'm not nervous about him making any mistakes because he's going to make some mistakes. I just don't want him to make a humiliating mistake.
I heard you saying that with Clint and Ron. Don't do anything viral.
I don't want a baseball to hit his forehead or something like that. I don't want him to forget how many outs there are. I don't want there to be something that's really, really bad. I think he's probably not going to get a great read on every batted ball at first, and then watching to see how he throws the ball in when the ball is
that's
in play.
The big thing for me. Like you listeners will hear this. When Adam talks to Dana Brown, they go pretty deep on Altuve playing left field.
Yeah.
And Dana kind of gives a reminder like, hey, we got to see how he throws.
Yeah.
You know, how he does it, you know, like in games with regular batters.
It sounds like they're trying to treat it as casually as possible, and it's one reason that they're not coming right out and saying he's going to be the starting left fielder.
Yes.
Is that you don't want to put a lot of pressure on him or anything. But I think Altuve, every single report and everything – anybody, every time anybody talks about it, is that Altuve is fully embracing the challenge of it. Yeah. And I think it's probably fun. You're 35 years old, and this is something new, you know? You go through the drudgery of 162 games every year in postseason
Spice
runs.
It up, man.
Yeah, spice it up. A little change.
Yeah, I would say if he did something that went viral, he's pretty high up the list, I would think, of players who are going to get piled on by opposing fan bases.
Oh, yeah.
If something goes viral. I mean, they still boo him, and he didn't even cheat, you know?
Right, yeah.
So I would.
Those
I would,
sons of bitches.
Yeah, now he's also high on the list of players who probably don't give a flip about getting
piled on. Oh, no, he definitely
doesn't.
I don't think
virally.
He sees any of it.
Yeah.
You know, that was one thing about yesterday was the Mets ballpark. There's so many Northeasterners down here in Miami that live here as snowbirds or what have you. It was a really full crowd, and it feels like you're in a tropical version of New Jersey. Like, all the accents you hear around you are Northeastern accents. They're either from Long Island or New Jersey or New York. And it annoyed me yesterday. I had a great time with Mets fans when they were at the Cacti Park a few days ago.
Were you surprised how few Astro fans there were at Port St. Lucie yesterday?
I guess, no. Maybe a little bit. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. If I was here on a spring training trip, I would make that drive. It's an hour. I would make that drive up there to go to the game.
I think a lot of Astros fans, some of the people I talked to earlier in the week said that they were going, like, one of our listeners was going on a fan boat excursion
on
Thursday.
Yeah, and they've been at Cacti, which is the name of the ballpark now, all week long, even on Wednesday.
Yeah.
That game, even though they were the road team, they were playing there because they share the facility with the Nationals. I could see that then, where they played home game Tuesday, rain out Monday, home game Tuesday, home game Wednesday. They have another home game today, obviously.
Yeah. So they go. So a lot of people have just kind of gone on off and done something touristy on Thursday.
Yeah.
And it's a pain. The traffic's not so awesome down here.
It's not.
It's Houston-like.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to, you know, claim superiority over South Florida because they've got awful traffic.
It's just so fun at these ballparks.
I know.
It's so fun.
It's a really cool environment. Yeah. Even just, like, the people you meet, and I'm joking about Mets fans, because everybody you meet is, for the most part, super laid back.
They're all cool.
We were messing around with some Mets fans before the game because we took a picture on one of those big, huge beach chairs.
It said Mets on
it. So this guy asked if he would, if this guy took a picture for us, and I stood up in front of the Mets logo, and he's like, "You got to show the Mets logo." And I was like, "No, I'm from Houston." Yeah. Instead of them throwing beer cans at me, they laughed.
That was
a nice moment.
That was nice. You know what else I liked? I like that the two guys that they're bringing in, the two most prominent players that they brought in, one via trade, obviously, in Paredes, and I'm saying prominent in terms of contributing this year.
Yeah.
Cam Smith is obviously the crown jewel of that trade, or we hope he is, of that trade. But in terms of 2025 contributors, the big thing, and Dana Brown talked about this with Spillane too, Paredes and Christian Walker were last year first and 10th in number of pitches seen per at-bat.
Yeah.
And I think there's – and they – that played out these few games.
They
that
had competitive at-bats.
Competitive at-bats. They walked a few times, each of them, you know, like – or collectively they walked a few times. I don't know how many for each. But it really sounds like to me from what Dana was talking about with Adam, and you guys will hear that interview here coming up in probably about 10 minutes or so. They're hoping, I think, that permeates throughout the rest of they have not had a lineup that's been that way, and especially last year they were last in the league, if I'm not mistaken, in pitches seen per
that's one of the things Espada talked about coming into spring training, was that they got to get back to being that team that's got great plate discipline. So yes, Walker and Paredes are both known for that. Walker had a couple hits yesterday that weren't as impressive as the box score would suggest. I mean, one was a fly ball that was just hard to field and should have been a foul ball, but I think it hit somebody's I couldn't tell from where
everybody
we were
in the press box thought it was a foul ball.
Yeah, so I think it hit somebody's foot before it went out. And then he had a bloop single later on. So it was soft contact on both of them. I was
putting the ball in play.
It's not like I'm alarmed or worried about this at all, because Walker is a very good fielder, but he didn't show his best fielding version of himself in the couple of games that we've seen so far.
Yeah, I'm holding him to a Gold Glove standard,
right?
You know, like, and so, like, in the Thursday game against the Mets, there was a potential double play, that I think a Gold Glove first baseman comes up with.
You're right. It was. He had been talking about how it's hard to, you know, maintain your focus for 3 hours. You're like, this isn't the bottom of the first.
Right,
it was 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's the bottom of the first. I tried to get angry, but I couldn't.
No.
Yeah.
Not yet. So
he
saw
Bryce Matthews at shortstop yesterday, too.
Yes, yeah,
and
yeah.
Nothing notable. He didn't really have any opportunities to do anything special, but he got a hit. And did he get a hit or did he walk? He got a hit, yeah.
Bryce Matthews?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Not sure. And then the pitching. I thought, as far as good, just – and obviously all these guys that are coming in are pitching one inning, maybe two innings at the most. But I thought – Wisniewski did more good things than bad.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like there's something to work with there. There better be. He's penciled in as your fifth starter right now. Framber did Framber things.
Yeah.
No hits. Got a double play. Induced a double play, as they like to say.
Wisniewski, I thought he looked good, and he gave up a solo home run in the game we were watching, but yeah. He also was working on his curveball. He's added that curveball to his repertoire.
But that was the only run he gave up.
Right. No, and that's exactly what you want to hear. We've seen so much success of pitchers coming into the Astros and just by changing their pitch selection and adding a pitch or here or there, it's made drastic transformations in how they operate as pitchers. So, yeah, I'm bullish on Wisniewski right now.
Spo's boy, Logan Van Wey.
Mm-hmm.
Am I pronouncing that right, Spo? Van Wey? Van Wey. Van Wey. Oh, I'll know his
name. Van Wey is more
palmable. That's disrespectful by me.
He'll be Van Wey when he has a bad outing.
Yeah.
Because we'll play the why, Brock, why? Yes. Van Wey, Brock, Van Wey. Why?
But that's Spo's boy, man.
But when he's good, he's Van Wey to go.
We asked.
I'm wearing my Hokas. I got complimented. It's an old man complimented.
You're making jokes with somebody who's wearing Hokas.
An old man complimented my Hokas yesterday.
Because he had on the exact same
shoes. The exact same ones, except his look.
He had to be 80.
He kept them clean.
He was cool. He caught a foul ball.
I know. Yeah, did you actually see the catch? Or
I didn't see it. I know. Parker, our boss, came over to me in the press box. I had my head down at the time. And, he was sitting, the old man, and his wife, I assume, or significant other, they were sitting right along the first baseline, probably about eight rows back.
Yeah.
And Parker kind of nudges me and said, is that the guy we were walking in with? And I looked down there, he's holding the ball and holding court and talking to everybody. I'm like, that is him. That was cool.
That's the thing I like about these spring training ballparks is that a lot of them, they feel like the Little League World Series, where if there's a home run hit, that was a foul ball that you were just talking about.
Yeah.
But if there is a home run hit, you've got a reasonable chance at getting to it.
Yes.
So especially if you have your kids out there, but you keep, you can wear your cleats and you can get to it and then give it to your kid without having to elbow out some other toddler or something on your way to it.
I did my hit with In the Loop yesterday while standing next to the left field foul pole during Cam Smith's at bat. He got a base hit.
Yeah.
But I was really hoping he'd jerk one down the left field line, and I'd catch a home run ball.
Oh, yeah, you'd be out of that.
While on the phone.
On your phone, catch it with your left hand.
Because I'd totally catch it.
Yeah, of course you would.
I would totally catch that. I would shy away from it the last second. Oh, it looks like it hurts.
You and I, our attention was waning at the end of yesterday's game, and you and I, we realized we probably, a ball went up into the suite right below us.
Yeah.
But if it had gone into our stands, one of us would have gotten hit in the head.
Yes.
We weren't paying attention. We were chatting about something.
Man, yeah. It's a grind. Probably some of that Long Island iced tea in a can still residual from Wednesday. Yeah.
That's the other big thing that Sean and I discovered is that Long Island iced tea in a can, just like Long Island iced tea in a bar, is really, really strong.
Strong.
Yeah. Sean Pendergast, an Irishman, noticed it even after a few sips.
Two sips.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You were like a college freshman. All of a sudden you're like, oh, I feel so happy.
Ripped my shirt off. Yeah.
Isn't this awesome? This is awesome, isn't it? Boy, this is awesome.
Everything was awesome and everybody was my best friend. All right. Coming up next, a great conversation that Adam Spolane, our Astros reporter here live in West Palm Beach, had on Thursday with Dana Brown, the Astros GM, touches on everything from Cam Smith to Altuve in left field to Lance McCullers to the question, has Jim Crane ever said no to you on anything? Adam asked that question. So we got a whole lot that Spo is going to get to here with Dana Brown. That is all coming up next, live from West Palm Beach. Stay there.
Sports Radio 610 presents live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Welcome back in. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. All right, let's throw to it right now. You've heard us talking about it. Great conversation between Adam Spillane, our Astros reporter, and Astros general manager, Dana Brown.
2 weeks into camp, has there been anything or anyone that has really caught your eye?
That's easy. Cam Smith. Yeah, Cam Smith caught my eye because he's just, he looks to be a disciplined hitter with some power. And so it's kind of exciting right now. I hope he continues to progress and grow, but he's been the guy that really, you know, really caught my eye. It's been very exciting to see Altuve in left, you know, because of how much ground he's covering, because he still has really good foot speed. That's been exciting. The fact that Christian Walker and Paredes looks like they're going to see a lot of pitches, you know, as demonstrated when they were in the lineup together the other day. That looked pretty appealing to me and good. I think that could be contagious in our lineup. And then, you know, the pitching, the starting pitching looked like it's going to be, you know, pretty good. You know, Framber started yesterday. And then our other guys are looking pretty good, too. So, and the last thing I would say, the energy has been outstanding out on the field. I think Perez Chica has been a kind of a standout and, you know, getting the boys fired up and ready and all the drills and things that we do defensively. So there's a lot of good going on.
With Smith, you saw him before the draft. Now kind of getting to know him and getting to see him every day, is there anything that you maybe underestimated with him?
Yeah, the human being is special. And that's where I always say, when you nail the human being on a draft pick, that's when you usually see special things happen. And so I know he wasn't our draft pick, but we got a trade. And, you know, we like the tools and the ability. But just getting to know him and how dedicated he is to his craft and, you know, how competitive he is, but yet humble. It's a treat.
He obviously, after the trade, you talked about him maybe playing one of the corner outfielder spots. He said the other day he's been working with basically just the infield guys. So what do you envision for him this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think depending on like how fast the bat comes, you know, he's played some outfield as an amateur in the past, like in the Cape Cod League. So, you know, we felt like he can run fast enough to play right field, and he could really throw. And so if the bat continues to come and develop, you know, we may get him some outfield reps, knowing that, look, you know, you got to probably a clearer path to get into the big leagues faster as an outfielder. And so we knew when we traded for him, you know, there was a chance that he could end up in the outfield because he's such a tall third baseman. And, you know, you don't really see a lot of third basemen that tall. And so, you know, just getting some reps will probably depend on, like, how fast the bat comes. And the bat, so far, looks pretty good.
Do you know where you want to start him?
No. I mean, we're going to let him continue to, you know, play it out. You know, sometimes the players will let you know where they should start, and I think that's the big point. The players let you know where they should start, and I think if you continue to watch this guy, you'll get an idea of where he should start.
Altuve in left field, you were pretty bullish back in January, and it seems like that has only increased. Just, you haven't seen it in a game yet, but is anything that you have seen make you think that he won't be able to do it? Like, is there a world where he's not your opening day left fielder at this point?
Well, the whole thing with Altuve is whenever you have a position change, you know, you have to treat it very lightly. You cannot be, like, dogmatic about, like, oh, this is definitely going to work or it's definitely going to happen. I think you have to tiptoe into it. You have to inch into it. And so part of me being bullish is like, you know what, let's see him take a few fly balls. How much he's developed and left. And the big thing is how well he goes into the gaps and how good his foot speed actually shows up in the outfield. You know, we still have to see him make throws and things like that, and we have to see him play in a game, but it's been pretty exciting to see the energy that he brings to the outfield.
McCullers, now he's going to face hitters here coming up this weekend. You still haven't seen him throw. You haven't seen him face hitters since you've been the GM. But it has felt like over the last month or so that between you and between Joe and even between Lance, the optimism is maybe higher than it has been since he came back in 22. At this point, what can you really expect from him? Like, is it like anything you get from him is gravy at this point? Or are you really expecting him to be an important contributor for you right now?
Yeah, I think it's still early, too early to tell, but the fact that he's up to 91 is very, very encouraging. And the fact that he's working so hard is very, very encouraging. And the fact that he hasn't had any discomfort or pain, suggests that he's climbing in the right direction. And so I really feel good about this one. You know, there comes a time where some of these arms, when they get hurt and they really get to the point where they're coming back, when they have those setbacks, it's discouraging, but when they continue to progress and we haven't really seen the setback, that's very, very encouraging.
I know he's been frustrated, but what have you just thought of his, I guess, mental toughness going throughout this whole thing where he's had to kind of start and stop so many times the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think that's a warrior. He has a warrior's mental toughness. You know, it's a calm, steady climb to get back. And even when you slip and fall on some of those climbs, he continued to press on. And I think the fact that he's pressing as hard as he's pressing to press on, I think it's really encouraging to see that. Because look, ultimately he's under contract. He's made some decent money in his career. You know, a lot of guys would have just said, hey, enough of this, you know, but he's continued to show that, look, I'm that same guy that you saw in the postseason, you know, dominate major league hitters with my breaking stuff. And so I think he's committed. I think he's very committed to coming back. And how beautiful would it be if he could come back this year and give us a real huge shot in the arm in the postseason?
I got a couple more things for you.
Yeah.
The Tucker trade, it makes sense when you know you're probably not going to be able to re-sign him. With Framber, you're kind of in that same position. By not trading Framber, did you feel like you've got a shot at bringing him back after this season? Or was it more of, if we trade him, then we really have no shot at being competitive this year?
No, I think ultimately it's this. It's like, whenever you have a guy in-house still, you always have a chance of signing him, right? That's just a given, regardless. If he's here, you have a chance. You could talk to him. You could work with his agent. You can continue to, you know, have dialogue, right? Now, in terms of, you know, postseason and all that without him, sure. If you lose a guy that's been, you know, 200-plus innings for multiple years and he takes the ball 30 times plus a year or 25 times plus a year, and all of a sudden you pull that out of your rotation, you know, the fact that his second half last year was so strong, I mean, you don't want to pull that out of your rotation because you can't win without pitching. So that would have made our climb a little bit tougher. And so, you know, I wasn't interested in, like, you know, pulling that piece out of a rotation. He's the anchor. He's our number one, you know. You know, between him and Brown, it's 1-1A, depending on what Joe decides to do. I mean, it's Joe's ultimate call. But he's a top-of-the-rotation guy, and you don't want to lose a top-of-the-rotation guy if you can carry him in that year. If you lose him by free agency, okay, you understand that. But if you just move him by trade, and it's hard to get that same number one or two or whatever he's going to end up being, it's very difficult to get that. And so I was not interested in trying to go get pitching because every team needs pitching and no one's giving up pitching, really.
Have you spoken with him or his representatives about an extension?
Over the past 2 years, yes. But, you know, ultimately, nothing new. But I got a really good relationship with him. I have a really good relationship with his agent. And I would assume at some point, you know, this year that we'll have some conversations.
All right. Last thing. We talked in this office a couple years ago. You had just gotten the job. You're trying to learn all the names and all the stuff that came with it. Does this feel like it's more your roster now at this point?
Look, I always feel like the roster belongs to the team and the front office and ownership, because it's a collective group. You know, we make acquisitions here. We don't make any acquisitions without talking to our owner, keeping him in the loop, talking to our manager, collectively collaborating in the front office. So it's like, I mean, it seems like it's my roster, but it's the group's roster, you know. And so I think we've all worked hard to make the adjustments we've made, whether it's signing Walkers, trading for Paredes, or, you know, what have you, but we've all collected, or trading Tucker or whatever. We've all collectively come together and said, let's continue to think about what's best for this team in the present and what's best for this team in the future.
Between you, Jim, and Joe, how in line have you guys been over the last year or so?
Totally in sync. There's a special oneness of what we do and talk about, and we all get on the same page, and it's not that you always have to agree, but you all get on the same page to try to do what's best for the organization.
Has Jim said no to anything that you've wanted to do?
Look, Jim, he will give his opinion, but ultimately he'll let me make the final decision. I mean, I think that's pretty much how I would describe him. You know, he'll always give his input, but he'll always say, look, it's your call. What do you want to do? Here is my opinion. And he lets me make the call, which I think is, it's been great. You know, and when you don't have a president in between the two, it's just the GM and the owner. And the owner tells you, hey, he gives you his opinion, and he says, look, you have to make the call, but this is my opinion.
Dana, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem at all. Yeah.
Man, what a great conversation with Adam Spillane and Astros general manager Dana Brown. In fact, we'll spend the final segment of the show, Seth Payne and myself, breaking down the things that we liked that we heard in that interview. There's two things in particular that I liked. Towards the very end of the interview, much more comfortable with, I think, how things are structured with the Astros, and also something that reminded me of the Texans, believe it or not, in this interview. We'll get to all that coming up next. Stay there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Rhys Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, welcome back in. Final segment of the week in West Palm Beach. Again, huge thanks to Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors for sending us here for what's been an amazing trip to West Palm Beach to kind of start getting that Astros excitement tamped up. Seth, I was already excited for the season. I'm even more excited after being here for a week watching this squad.
I'm really excited, you know, and we kind of went over all of the things that we were excited about. I thought that Dana Brown and the way he talks about Cam Smith, it had already been really positive, but to hear him talk to Adam about it and to just gush about his personality and his energy and all of that, it honestly feels a little bit like the way they talked about Will Anderson with the Texans.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. I teased that into this segment. I actually wrote that down on my notes. You and I are working off of separate notes right now, right? So you and I were both taking separate notes on the Dana Brown.
Like one of those mentalists.
Dana Brown. Yeah, Sean the mentalist. But you're right. No, well, Cam Smith, when Adam's very first question off the top, where what's caught your eye this spring training, Dana Brown, literally his words, that's easy, Cam Smith.
Yeah.
So he's very excited about Cam Smith. And it's funny, the follow-up to that from Adam, he said the thing that not surprised him, but that he's learned about him that he didn't know is how special a human being he is.
Yeah.
He's just a great kid, gets after it, works hard. And that's where it's so funny you say Will Anderson. I wrote down, Dana Brown said, when you nail the human being part of the evaluation.
Yeah.
And I said, man, I wrote down, this is very Texans-like.
Yeah, well, and
this is very Texans-like.
You know what? Yeah, not to turn this into a Texans segment or anything, but it reminds me of the way that coaches look at the combine, and D'Amico talked about this on the coaches show this week. It's that, look, you know you're not going to be able to draft every kid that you like at the combine, but you're identifying the ones that you like and all of that. So Dana Brown's evaluation of Cam Smith, you know, in this trade goes back to all the work that he did on him beforehand. So he, when he was a prospect in high school, or in college. So this is confirmation that he thought he had a good character, you know, a good baseball character.
He even called him a draft pick a couple times. He's like, I know I didn't draft him.
But I would have.
But in parentheses afterwards, but I traded for him as fast as I could.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that jumped out at me, too. I'm like, man, the stuff he's talking about are all the things the Texans are doing with these prospects at the combine this
You know
week.
What it makes me feel even better about? Our appraisal of Cam Smith's mom when we met
Thank
her.
Thank you.
We thought she was awesome.
She was delightful.
We were really happy for her. We got to see her after Cam Smith's 2 home runs in his debut.
Yeah.
For the Astros in spring training, and she was just over the moon, and she and her friends were really, really cool. We talked to them in the parking lot afterwards.
Yeah, how did that not wind up in our list of things earlier this hour that we loved about West Palm Beach?
I don't know.
Meeting Cam Smith's family.
It in there. I felt like we talked about it too much at the time.
Screw that.
But no, because, look, you got to credit the parents.
Yeah.
If the kid's got a great personality and does things the right way and everything, then, man, they must have done something right raising Cam Smith.
I wish we ran into her after we, after Spo did this interview with Dana Brown, because I would have loved to have shared these quotes with her, you know, about what a great human being he is.
Maybe
she
we'll
knows
see
already,
her today,
later today. All right, so, yeah, Cam Smith was a big topic. That was, it was a, about a 12-minute interview. About 4 minutes of it was Cam Smith, and it was mostly because Spo couldn't stop Dana from gushing about the guy.
Right.
You know, Altuve in left field was a big topic in this interview, and the Dana Brown said, getting into the gaps, using his foot speed, these are all positives right now, we think. Just the little detail of, quote, still have to see him make throws and play in a game, end quote.
You know, yesterday when I was on the afternoon show, and then you joined me at the end of it, one of the texters asked, I don't get why this is a story. Why shouldn't an infielder, a major league infielder, be able to play in the outfield? That's a very valid question. I think there's two things. One, it's his age, which he's trying. He's an old dog trying to learn new tricks.
So
the getting a read on the ball and everything and all of that, I think you could just say it's more of a challenge for somebody that's never played the position before. But really, the big obstacle is his arm going to be a liability?
Yep.
Is it going to be too hard for him to effectively throw in crucial situations? Not that those situations come up that often in left field, but it's a consideration. And they've already talked about how Peña has to set up a little deeper in the outfield on relay throws. So that's the, if I'm worried about anything, we joked around earlier that I just don't want to see him, Altuve, make a bad error or something. Really, I just want to see that he's got viable arm strength that throw back into the infield.
Well, I mean, those throws are high leverage plays out there. You're usually trying to keep a guy from getting to third, which puts him in position to score, or you're trying to throw him out at home, which, you know, those are runs.
Yeah.
So Altuve in left field, but Dana Brown seems legitimately excited about Altuve in left field. And more importantly,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and more importantly, Dana Brown loves to talk about how excited Altuve himself is.
Yeah, Altuve's really embracing the challenge. But I also think that he shed a little light into probably the way that the Astros have been talking about this and presenting it as a possibility, is that he said you have to take position changes lightly. You don't want to put too much pressure on a guy, I think. And maybe they also didn't want Altuve to feel like he was being forced out there. So from that standpoint, they've handled it really well because Altuve's embracing it fully.
I never would have seen this coming.
I thought it was a fake report when I saw it at first. Remember, whoever reported it, at least the first report I saw wasn't from a Houston reporter, and I thought, what's this clown talking about? And lo and behold, he was not a clown. Well, I was the clown.
The first report, I feel like the first big public reports of it even being a possibility were in conjunction with them circling back with Bregman.
Yeah.
And it was positioned as Altuve. It was I know this. The first time it became a big public story, it wasn't like this. It was definitely not positioned as something that they've been working on in the offseason. It was much more about this is what Altuve is willing to do.
Yeah.
You know, this is the sacrifice
and
he's willing to make for that mercenary Bregman.
Yeah, and Altuve himself cleared that up this week, that they had talked about it anyway. And it does make a lot of sense given that he's declined in defense over the last couple years and he's just not been the same guy at second base. Plus, with the shift, has made it harder to play second base, too.
Yeah. Yep.
Or with the absence of the shift.
Yep. So Altuve in left field. All right, the Lance McCullers part of the interview. And I thought Spo brought up a really good point. Dana Brown has never seen, since coming here in early 2023, March of 2023 or February, whatever, about this time 2 years ago, I guess it'd be February of 2023 when he became the GM. He's never seen Lance throw a pitch with a hitter in the batter's box.
In a baseball game. Right. Yeah, he's never done a live BP in front of him.
Live BP he's doing this weekend is the first chance he'll get to see that.
So there hasn't been any setbacks or discomfort or pain since the last setback, I guess. When he was saying that, I thought, with Lance, it's been, there's no setbacks until there's a setback. But so far, it's been a long stretch of it. I like the point he made about how Lance had made a bunch of money already, and he could have easily just sat back. So immediately I Googled how much he's made in his career. $83 million.
He's made $83 million? Yeah. Okay, yeah. So he's 3 years into that extension that he signed. He's got $17 million coming to him this year and next year. Then he'd be a free agent. Warriors mental toughness is what he said. And that was the I wrote the same thing down, Seth, that where he said a lot of guys would have basically cashed out at this point. And he's right. Look, I feel like the fact that I'm excited about Lance this year, and I understand the injury history. I get it. I'm not a moron. But the fact that I'm allowing myself to get excited, and the fact that when I get excited about it, it feels like there's so much pushback from Astros fans that listen to the show, I feel like I've evolved into this apologist for Lance McCullers.
Yeah.
You know, and not
for... What are you working for the team, Sean?
Not for performance reasons, obviously, because he hasn't performed in 2 years, but just for the fact, like, none of these injuries are his fault. It's not like he lives an irresponsible lifestyle and got injured.
That's true. You know what? That's a really good point about it, because he's played through injuries before. He played with a partially torn UCL.
In the playoffs.
I don't know how many modern major league pitchers have that kind of mindset.
Right.
Where they're like, because that the other part, because it's not a matter of the pain, it's the fact that when you go out and pitch with a partially torn UCL, it's the fear of embarrassment.
Yeah.
That you're going out there against the best baseball players in the league,
on
the best teams in the league, and pitching while you're compromised. But he did it because that was what was best for the team.
Yeah.
And he was one of the heroes of the 2017 World Series.
Right? He was, yeah. And so that's where, for me, I love that Dana made that point that, man, a lot of guys who've made, I think, what he called a decent amount of money, more than a decent amount, obviously, as you point out, but that a lot of guys would have cashed out and go sit on a big pile of, he'd go sit on a $100 million pile of money.
Yeah.
And
going
play with
to
his
broadcasting
daughter,
or something.
He'd be a great broadcaster. Yeah, he absolutely could. That he's out there rehabbing for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've rehabbed from injuries before.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine rehabbing from an injury for 2 years?
Well, I think that's when Dana was talking about his mental toughness. That is, when you're having extreme setbacks like he has, it is hard to just not get disheartened and to stay focused and just keep plodding along. Because this was like, when you have like a 3-week injury, it's hard to stay focused sometimes and not get a little bit depressed because you're not out there and you've got no way to test yourself.
Yeah.
So for him to steadfastly stay focused on coming back and being a starter, it is impressive.
It is impressive. All right, there were two other things that I thought were interesting in this in the interview that Adam Spillane did with Dana Brown. If you missed it, it's in the previous segment. It'll be up on the podcast. I'm sure it's going to get played throughout the day here on Sports Radio 610. There were a lot of really good nuggets in this thing. Do you feel more positive, less positive, or the same amount of positive that Framber Valdez is signing an extension with the Houston Astros?
And I felt like the answer was whatever was in the middle there.
Yeah.
Same. Adam did a great job. He asked him about whether Dana's talked to Framber's representation, and Dana said, well, yeah, over the last couple of years we have. Adam was like, so nothing new. And basically, no, nothing new. Nothing. So it doesn't sound like anything of substance recently.
No, and I think the other interesting part of that we'll get to, but the funny thing about that part of the answer, like, have you talked to him? Well, over the past couple of years, you've been the GM for 2 years.
Yeah.
So that basically means, yes, I've talked to
At some point,
I've talked to his agent. But Adam asked him about trading Framber, and they traded Tucker, and they got some guys back in return. You know, why not Framber? And it's very clear between Dana, and I saw a quote from Jim Crane this week, too, at some interview that he did, that they view pitching differently than they view position
and
players.
And especially when he's an ace.
He's an ace.
And he's your number one guy. And it's hard to go into a season without that guy right there. And I think there is that part of it, too, where, you know, to steal from D'Amico's jargon again, I feel like Framber is more Swarm than Kyle Tucker. Like, whatever the Astros version is of Swarm.
Yes.
Going back to when A.J. Hinch had to tell a young Kyle Tucker that he had to get on board with the way that Astros players operate, that there needs to be a level of urgency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Framber, for all of his faults that he had as a younger player, I never sensed a lack of urgency with Framber. If anything, Framber was too urgent. He was too Swarm to the point where it implode his brain.
If we're doing cross-sport comparisons, kind of like we did with Cam Smith and Will Anderson a little bit earlier, Framber's Aziz. He's Aziz Alshire.
He's got
that sixth gear.
You got to figure out a way to dial it back a little bit at times.
Yeah. He's Aziz. So, I mean, obviously, they love Framber. Dana loves Framber. I do not feel optimistic there's going to be an extension coming anytime soon.
I wouldn't sign
one if I were Framber, if I'm being honest. Like, he's probably the guy that needs to worry the least about injuries amongst all these guys. Like, he's a total workhorse, you know? All right, the last thing. This is the part that I really like, too, is Adam asked Dana Brown about the alignment between, you know, from top to bottom, straight down, between Jim Crane, the owner, Dana Brown, the GM, Joe Espada, the on-field manager, and he said, we're totally in sync. And Adam asked Dana, has Jim Crane ever said no to you on anything?
Yeah.
And he didn't really say yes or no either way, but what he did say was that the final decisions are his. Mm-hmm. And that Jim always gives his input, but the final decisions are his. This made me feel a whole lot better that we aren't operating with this five-headed monster running this thing anymore.
Yeah.
GM is being the GM is not being Bagwelled. We know he's not being Reggie Jackson because Reggie's out of the building now. I don't know how much input Biggio had.
But that was a concerted move they made in the offseason to kind of pare down the input group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Dana gets to function on his own.
Because Adam had asked whether it felt like it was Dana's team. And I think Dana, he has to give a diplomatic answer there. He doesn't want to act like, this is my show.
Yeah.
But I think the term that he used in the next question in answering it about the relationship between Espada, Crane, and Dana Brown was a special oneness.
Yeah.
So it feels like you smooth out some of the rough edges and trying to figure out how you're going to operate. And this does certainly, I think, feel a lot different than it ever did with James Click as the GM.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Crane's more, he vibes with Dana Brown a lot better than he ever did with James Click.
Well, look, this franchise, this roster is at a stage where they need a guy like Dana Brown.
Yeah.
They got to restock the minor league system. They're going to be, who knows if they're, maybe Framber gets flipped at the trade deadline. Who knows? There's going to be more, the evaluation of young players is way more important now than it was during the golden age 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So let Dana cook is what I'm
saying.
Let Dana cook.
Except we don't need a t-shirt because we feel like he is being allowed to cook.
He is.
So it's not, you don't have to go, you don't have to start a fan website and sell your t-shirts on.
There you go. There you go.
Wherever they do those.
This was a fun week, man.
It was.
This was a fun week.
This was one of the best vacations I ever took while actually working.
And we thank Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors for sending us here.
I might have to get to Academy and buy a kayak. Now that I've just after
you like
after,
that kayak,
I like that there. Kayak out there. It's a badass kayak.
It is.
Whichever version Academy offers, I'm getting it.
All right. So we got to get to the airport. So we can't even do any crosstalk here. We're going to toss.
Got to get to a game and then the airport.
Game in the airport. So we're going to get to a. Get to the break here, Seth. Antibodies to you.
Antibodies and a splendid rest of 2025 to you.
Thank you. In the Loop is up next.